isn't gossip. No, he doesn't talk trash. Did you say this was a daily podcast?
Hello, my little peanuts. It's me, your host, Lance Bass. This is the Daily Popcast for Tuesday, March 24th, 2020. I got Peachy King with me.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's, you know, going.
We're still quarantining.
Still here.
but we have each other.
Yeah, we have each other.
And we might pass something back and forth to each other, but, you know, we're gonna be in it together.
We committed, so we're here now, and that's exactly. That.
All right, we're halfway through the interviews with the ones that were behind the scenes, The ones making this all happen for us. Yesterday was really fun, catching up with Carrie Sellards and Kevin Antunes.
Yes, that was fun.
Yeah, and then we're going to continue today with Melinda Bell, and also, who else is on the show?
Tim Miller,
yes. Yeah. Yes, head of production. So, yeah, Tim Miller and Melinda, they both probably have the best stories, I would say, of all of us. So let's see which stories they're actually going to share. All right, on the phone now, we got Miss Biddy Bell, Melinda Bell. Melinda, we have been having so much fun reminiscing the last week about No Strings Attached and the band, and getting a lot of good perspective from people that were around us, like Kevin Antunes, Johnny Wright, Carrie Sellards, and yourself. First off, how did you first hear about NSYNC?
I first heard about NSYNC through Johnny. Johnny and I worked for Johnny. I was like his only employee. And he said, I want you to come see another group because we were currently working with Backstreet Boys. And I said, okay. So you guys must have been performing somewhere in Orlando. Because I went and saw you perform, and then he pulled me aside and said, what do you think? And I was just like, crazy good.
Did you think we were so much better than the Backstreet Boys?
Yes.
Oh, I can't believe you actually gave her an answer. All right. Love it.
But you know, I also love them, but it was just a different type of, sorry, my dog is going crazy. Sawyer, get out of the office. It was a different type of, it was a different type of performance because, you know, Backstreet is so ballad heavy, but your harmonies were, I'm going to get killed for saying this. Your harmonies were way tighter than theirs. I went ching ching all over again. So,
yeah. And I mean, and that is a testament to Robin Wiley there for the harmonies.
Oh, she's,
you know, if Backstreet Boys had a Robin Wiley, I'm sure they would have given us a run for our money. Yeah. Now.
Right. And I didn't know her at that time. So I didn't know that, but learned to know that as the years went on.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And when was the first time that you joined us on the road? You remember that?
Oh, God, I know.
No, it's so long.
I mean, I can tell you the tour, it wasn't, I didn't go to Europe with you guys.
Right.
That was all pre-me. But then you came home. I want to say it must have been, Ain't No Stopping Us Now, the first tour?
Yeah, that was the 98 tour, I believe.
Because Ibrahim was the tour manager.
Ugh,
Fritz was security.
For the fans to know, so Ibrahim Duarte was our tour manager at the time in Germany and here, and he eventually would also take advantage of us like Lou Pearlman. So, yay.
Yes, and I believe that is why I was put on the road, because I was eyes and ears when Johnny was not around.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, do you know what the official title was for you on the road? Because for me, the unofficial title was always, this is our professional bitch.
Oh my God. Thank you, Lance. That is so lovely for you to share with the world.
You were the one that would set the law down and make sure everything was,
I would, you know, say organized. No, because you guys didn't want to say no. My official title was special projects producer. Mm-hmm. So anything outside of the tour, the physical show, you know, where Dave Brown controlled the movement of all of us. If you guys had, you know, a special make-a-wish or a meet and greet, that would fall under me. So I would take care of all that logistical, oh, we've got 200 people today, this is what we need kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. With all,
oh,
the,
oh, we're going to this hospital before we go to the venue. So that was all Dave would say, what do we got today? And then I, you know, lay it out for him. And then he'd work that into the movement of the whole group.
Yeah. And you started, you know, you ran Challenge for the Children, our charity event, our basketball event every year.
I did.
How did that come about? I know we did a charity event over in Germany with the Backstreet Boys, and that probably is what spawned this idea eventually. But do you remember how this all came about, how we wanted to start this?
Well, and I executive produced that thing. Johnny, and actually, you know what? That might be the first time I met you guys.
Yeah.
Because Johnny flew me over, and I'll never forget this. I sat in I was all by myself, and I sat in the conference room with all the Germans and Werner, and they all spoke German. So I literally sat there going, okay, I need an interpreter because I didn't speak German. Yeah. But we basically did it. You guys wanted to do an NBA game, and it was NSYNC against Backstreet. So I produced that. Dennis Rodman, of all people, came in throughout the first ball. Remember that? That was crazy. But then, yeah, I think from that it spawned because you guys wanted to raise money. It was was it after Columbine? I don't remember.
It probably was right after Columbine, yeah.
But you guys wanted to do some type of charity, and I remember that the athletic boys wanted to do sporty stuff. So, I mean, the first challenge was just a basketball game and a party, and then it just grew and snowballed from there and became, as I will brag, humble brag, it became one of the most popular events of the year. I mean, celebrities would call me and say, I want in. And at one point, we were flying 65 celebrities and raising a ton of money.
I mean, it was so incredible how many people would come out and support us. What are some of the favorite celebs that you booked for our charity event? Because, I mean, we would have Kobe out there. We had so many incredible people.
Kobe coached one year and got me in a lot of trouble because he came off the bench as the coach and put a jersey on and played the last like 30 seconds. But somebody from the NBA was like, Melinda.
I know, because that is such a no-no off season. You cannot get injured and play things like this. No.
Well, yeah, it's actually in the NBA contract that they can't play in a non-sanctioned. It just was a bunch of rules and regulations.
And that's why when Kobe, remember, did you go to his Kobe Bowl at all? Remember he had that Kobe Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
And I loved that because
and Reggie Miller Bowl.
Oh, and the Reggie Miller Bowl. Yes, Reggie Bowl. Oh, I forgot about that. But yeah, I loved that because it was more my sport. I'm like, y'all, I can bowl.
It's very fun. And we actually kind of, you know, as you guys would go to different charity events, we would pick and we like that. So we in Chicago we bowled because there was a bowling alley there. The scavenger hunts were always the hardest for me, but they were also the most fun to watch you guys compete with each other.
Oh yeah.
You know, the battle of the network stars, we kind of brought back in the skills. It just was really fun. It was really, really fun to produce. And you asked me what celebrities, well, Gabrielle Union, Anthony Anderson, Trevor from O-Town, you know, was a little kid back then. Beverly Mitchell.
I'm trying to think. Shaq? Did Jessie Biel join us for one of those games? I'm trying to think of.
I don't think she ever.
Yeah, I don't remember her being there.
She wanted to, and we asked her every year, but her schedule always had a conflict.
Yeah.
And obviously, Brittany in the early days was there. Nelly. I mean, even the performers: Nelly, Ludacris.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I mean, you know, it was great because no one ever said no.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of their schedule.
When Justin was dating Cameron Diaz, she also came and played one year too.
Cameron, Usher. Mm-hmm. Usher and Justin and Chris used to compete like it was the NBA finals every year.
They took it very seriously. And Joey and I would just, you know, be having fun and we get to play for a good 30 seconds, you know, and then it's fun.
You're like, yeah, make my uniform. I'll be on the bench.
Exactly. Just make sure it's number 4 and I'll be over here having fun on the bench.
And just for all the fans that are listening, remember that you did all this during your tours.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you had a break and let's go do challenge. It was like you guys did it during tours.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Amazing.
What other kind of war stories do you have from the road that maybe has not been talked about before in the public that you've always wanted to be like, God, I wish people knew that this happened?
You know, one that sticks in my heart is Columbine because it was just a different. You know, you guys said, we're going. And I remember Johnny pulling me aside and saying, how do we make this happen? Because at the time, I was in charge of booking your planes if you did a private. And I was like, let's call NetJets. And you guys just, the whole country was shook by that. But the fact that you guys wanted to go, no press, and you just wanted to comfort, was it still sticks in my heart. It was just an amazing, you know, somber time, but what you did. And you know what else is the other one is the United We Stand. Nobody really talked about, but you guys were the leaders of that, bringing all those bands together, getting them all to, it was DC. We did it, right? The DC stadium.
Yeah. With Michael Jackson and everyone. Mm-hmm.
Michael, Mariah, God, every band, Aerosmith.
I'll never forget that concert. Well, one, because I mean, it was such a crazy time. I mean, I feel like we're at that level now here in the country of just that, like craziness happening. But I remember vividly the DC concert because, well, two things. One, that's where me and Jamie Lynn Sigler really became close.
Oh, wow. I just remember. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I really bonded with her. I mean, we met each other a few times, but like, that's where we really bonded. And then the other thing was, cause you know, Michael Jackson, you know, he was controlling everything basically. Like this was his concert. And I remember this was one of the last,
but it really wasn't.
Oh, I know that, but you know, Michael, he, you know, he likes to take control. But I remember this is one of the last times that we spoke because he got really upset that I left early. Joey and I had to, it was, you know, On the Line was premiering that,
it was
that next
huge,
week.
It was huge in Justin too. It was you, Joey, and Justin.
Oh yeah. And Justin had to leave. I don't know where he was going to. And so we had our, you know, it was the very first movie premiere back after 9/11. So it was like a big deal. And like, we just wanted to, you know, we wanted to bring back the industry and blah, 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 blah. So I had to leave, you know, performed, but we couldn't do the end because Michael wanted us all to come on stage and sing. I don't know what everyone sang at the end. But I couldn't. So I was like, I gotta fly to New York real quick. I got a premiere tonight. And he was so upset. Like he just changed. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah.
Oh yeah. He's like, remember, he was in your dressing. Remember we went to soundcheck and came back and he was in the back of the dressing room where nobody went, but you five singing and warming up yet. He had his dressing room.
Yeah.
He did. Down the hall.
Yeah. He always wanted to share dressing rooms with us.
Yeah, that was, he definitely wanted to run into you guys. It was so odd. And we're like, dude, you're in their dressing room. What are you doing?
It was fine by us. It was freaking Michael Jackson. What
I got to take a picture. I think I took a picture. I don't know if it was you and JC or JC and Joey, but I finally got to be like 2 feet from Michael Jackson taking a picture. So
but I'll never forget. He called me like, right, you know, as I was leaving, he's like, but Lance, it's for the children. It's for the children. You have to stay. It's for the children. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like living an SNL skit right now.
Your voice is a little low. Can you do that again?
It's for the children. It's for the children. Oh God. Now, how did you and Johnny Wright start working together?
Oh God, this is a great story. Actually, I'll try to make the short version. I worked at Walt Disney World, and every year at Walt Disney World, they used to do this thing called Grad Nights, which was you would come for 3 months, different weekends, and perform for these kids, and it was almost like high schools only. They closed the park. They came in formals back then. And I was in the entertainment department. So I was picked to host one of the bands. And one of the bands happened to be this band called New Kids on the Block. I had no clue who they were. I had to go look them up and buy a record because CDs hadn't come out yet. By the end of the 3 months shows, their CD came out. And they were, I mean, it went from nobody knowing who they were to mass hysteria.
Yeah.
And that's how I met all the, you know, and Johnny was their production manager. No, road manager, excuse me, road manager. So that's where I met him. And he said, I'm going to come back here. I'm going to move here and I'm going to steal you from the mouse. And I just kind of laughed and went, okay. And then I want to, because he wasn't married to Donna yet. So a year later, maybe, I'm not sure how much time passed, but he was like, I'm moving to Florida. And I had graduated college, left Disney and was working freelance in film and television and started working part-time for him. And then I remember walking in the streets of New York. Our first client was Turbo B. Mm-hmm. I got the power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we went to a pizzeria, Donna, Johnny, and I, and Backstreet Boys were at a table next to us with Lou, and Lou made them get up and sing a cappella for Johnny. And I looked across the table and I went, oh, ching ching, because their harmonies were incredible. And that's when Johnny signed, because he, you know, was thinking about signing them.
Yeah.
And that's when he signed them and said, you want to come work for me full time. And that's how it started.
Yeah. I mean, and how did Johnny know Lou at that time? Were they working on groups together?
He didn't. Oh, Donna had met someone who was in the Transcon circle, and they told Donna about these boys. And she was like begging Johnny to go meet with them. And he was like, oh God, I don't know. I don't know this Lou guy. I remember it. But then we went, you know, out for pizza. So we weren't kind of committed, right? We weren't tied into anything. But they were just amazing. Yeah. And that's how they started. Nick was 12 and shorter than me. Wow. You know how tall I am. So that'll tell you something.
Wow. Do you keep in touch with any of the Backstreet Boys?
Yeah, I keep in touch with Howie and AJ. You know, when they're in town or when I'm in the town there, and I always try to see them because they're still, you know, when you work that long with people, I don't dislike any of them. We just didn't work with them anymore after, you know, things changed.
Yeah. And as a woman on the road, it's got to be hard, especially, you know, starting in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I know what it's like to be on the road, and it's rough, you know, and it's definitely, I would say, you know, a boys club, because we're all just kind of stupid and, you know, very much acting like boys on the road. What was that like as a woman to have to, you know, sometimes be the only woman in the room in a lot of this stuff?
Well, it's again, you called me a not so nice word in the beginning, but
it's a term of endearment for me.
But it comes off, but you have to, and sometimes you have to come off that way, because I was taken advantage of. They thought they could push me over. Right. So what way could I not be pushed over than to stand up for myself and act, you know, sometimes act like a bitch? But it was, you know, the people you had on your crew and who I worked with and who I traveled with, did we have run-ins with some people at some times? Of course. But in the end, I would do anything for any of them because they're family. And that's what was cool about working for you guys, is that it felt like family, right? I mean, we had disagreements. There was one time Chris threw me out of the dressing room for no reason. But, you know, again, routine that you guys had was whatever shit went down during the day, we hugged it out before the show, right? Prayer circled, all that. Then you hugged everybody and have a great show.
Yep,
and Chris came right up to me and went, sorry, Mo. And, you know, and when we hugged it out, but it was just, you know, that's what it was like working with you guys. And as a woman on the road, yeah, it was hard. And there were moments where I really had to stand my ground because I'll just tell Johnny. I'd be like, okay, tell Johnny, like, go ahead. Cause Johnny and I always had conversations. So 95% of the time I was speaking for Johnny, right? Mm-hmm. So no pun intended.
Yeah, I get it.
but you know, so it was hard. And I think it's still hard. I think the music industry has a long way to go. I think it's gotten a lot better since this whole movement, but you know, women are smart too, guys. Just give us a chance.
Yes, they are. As you were part of management, is there anything as part of management you would have done differently for us back in the day, or maybe a gig we should have done or not done?
You touched on it with, I don't know which guys, I think maybe Justin and JC maybe, but I think I would have done scheduling different. Yeah. I think I would have made sure you guys had breaks, but that was such a, and to get even deeper on that, is it was tough for you guys because it was like, okay, well, we can have a week off here. Oh, wait, it's the People's Choice Awards and you just got nominated. Do you want to do it? And then of course you want to do it. So it was, but I think if it was going to be done all over again, I would fight for easier breaks, right? So tour for 3 months, take a month off, you know, as best you can. Because it wasn't, you guys at the point of your tours were not, oh, we only have one hit, we're never going to make it. You guys were like the biggest thing in the world. So you could get a tour date when you wanted it. It wasn't.
Yeah. It would have been nice to be able to reset every once in a while. Yeah.
Yes. That's a great word for it. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Yeah. But I don't know if I regret. God, I'd have to think about that deep. I don't think there's any regrets, you know, just being able to see you guys achieve and keep going up and see that, you know, oh my God, we got nominated for a Grammy. Oh my God, they got nominated for People's Choice. Like, and then to win and Super Bowl was really cool. But yeah, I mean, that was, you know, and again, it was so action packed, like going back to No Strings. I remember that week, like not sleeping. Like we'd go to the hotel for 4 hours and then get up and do morning press tonight. Like you guys were doing 18-hour days. It was insane.
Yep, we felt it. I'm still tired from it. Let's go through each guy. Give me one word to describe each guy. Start with Joey.
Always happy. until you piss him off.
Yeah, true. Chris.
Crazy, funny, big heart. I know it's not one word. Sorry.
That's okay. You can give me as many as you want. Justin.
Mega talented, but an old soul.
Mm-hmm. And wait, who's left? Oh, me. I guess I'm left. I forgot about me.
You didn't say JC.
Oh, JC. Shit. Okay. Sorry. JC.
Perfectionist. And yeah. Again, Mega, that voice is crazy, but I think he gets in his way sometimes because he overthinks things, but
yeah,
he's brilliant. He's brilliant in the studio.
Yeah.
And you, oh God, no, I'm kidding. Kind and very business oriented, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's yeah. The same. Everybody says the same answers. I know, but they're all, it's true.
It's true. What's your favorite NSYNC song?
Oh gosh. This is going to throw you, but I love the rendition you guys do of Sailing.
Yeah. Oh, that was a great one. Yeah.
The harmonies are crazy. If I have to pick off the album, I think I would pick the Robin Wiley one and Kevin and the Kevin Antunes one. Cause I love R&B. I'm a big R&B girl.
I know. I was just talking to Kevin, you know, before you, and we were talking about I'll Be Good For You, which he wrote with Justin. I was like, I love that song because it was so different for No Strings Attached because it really brought us back to how we began, you know, that yeah. huge R&B influence. So it reminded yep. me of being back in 1995 with the guys, which I love.
Yeah, wow. That's yeah. crazy. That's crazy.
Yep. Let's see. Da-da-da-da. Oh, what are your thoughts on a hypothetical NSYNC reunion? How would you see that happening?
Oh, it has to happen. It should happen. When you say, how do I see it happening? You mean, meaning,
like, what does that look like to you? Like, what would you, in a perfect world, would you like to say, oh, wow, you know, I want you to come out with a single and then blah, blah, blah. Then we do a 3-month tour.
Yeah. Well, here's my thoughts on that. Yes, you should come out with some kind of single, but I don't think that should lead the way mm-hmm. because people just want to see you guys perform. And you have the music to perform. A new record will only ice the cake, right? I think it should be a total surprise and be really, really cool rolled out.
Okay. Oh, so you like the secrecy thing.
Oh my God. When you guys did the MTV thing with the, and I'll go back to your Twitter account, that Check 1-2, like mm-hmm. people went crazy for yeah, it. Cool. So yeah, I love the, because I also think when you do it, and it doesn't have to be secret, but it has to be fun because you guys were known for that. You were innovative. You did things people never did before. And I think that just is your character, right? You're just older now, but you still all think the same.
Yeah.
So I just think, yeah. And I think it could be 4 or 5. I would love 5, mm-hmm. but I think 4 does it too.
Yeah.
And you guys proved that at Coachella, but that's my opinion.
Well, we also are on tour right now with the Pop 2000 tour.
We are.
And it's one of those tours that I think was just going to go for a few months and now it's gone past 2 years,
which is
great. Love it. That's
it just keeps giving.
I really love it. I mean, obviously it's on pause right now. Yes. But, tell us some good experiences on this Pop 2000 tour. Have you got, cause you didn't know many of the acts beforehand, right? Besides O-Town.
I didn't. I knew Aaron the best.
Oh, that's right, Aaron. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I actually didn't know O-Town that well, except for Trevor, because he came to challenge.
Right.
Because the other guys, they really weren't around us that much. But O-Town is incredibly talented. Mm-hmm. I like their music. I like their new stuff they've done. And I give them props because, again, where I wasn't a big fan before, now I am, and I'd support them anyway. Ryan, again, didn't realize he had that many hits and amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a fun tour. I think it's great to be out and see all these small cities and see the fans that still have the love for all you guys. It's yeah. just, it's a different, even though it's, you know, we're not doing stadiums and selling out arenas, but it's still really fun to do because it has that intimacy and the connections to the fans. So I just think it's a good gig.
Yeah. And Martin McGrath's joining this year too. Yes, so that'll be fun.
That'll be fun. Yep.
Yeah. And one thing I love about you, Melinda, is you are a big animal lover.
Yes, I am. Horses, my dog is sitting outside my door whining right now because I kicked him out.
I love that. What do you think about, like, because right now I'm trying to figure out a way to help find dogs homes during this corona, you know, quarantine, because there's so many shelters out there that need help getting these dogs out, because there's not many people able to come and take care of them. And now to me is a perfect time for, if you were thinking about getting a dog, or you just have room in your house to foster, not even to keep permanently, but just to foster right now and help find it a home would just be the best thing right now, you know. And I'm trying to find maybe an organization that can help me place dogs in people's homes now that all the families are together.
You know, and that is such a great thing. And I've posted that on Facebook and retweet, you know, anything someone posts a post like that. I think it is important. I think shelters can use it a lot. And don't be discouraged, because some things I've seen is that shelters are now making appointments for people to go. And a weird thing in Orlando, and I don't want to call them out in a negative, but I saw them do a post that says they're not going to do foster or go to, they wanted you to foster through their rescue partners. Because I think they were getting overwhelmed at the shelter. Okay. So, you know, that could be a way to do it too. I just think it's cool. And I think everybody needs a home, and you know, animals are just unconditional love that they're always there when you need them, especially I think people are going to start getting antsy and
I think it's so necessary, especially if you're, you know, by yourself, or even if you have a, you know, a family that has a lot of energy and the kids are home from school. I think a dog is a great distraction, and, you know, teaches them something and kind of keeps them occupied to get off.
Yeah. Puts them on a schedule, you know, even cats. I mean, cats aren't as schedule based, but you know, dogs have a schedule. If you walk them, which that's my advice for you and those two that keep peeing everywhere. I think they need a schedule to be let out.
Well, it doesn't matter, because they have a dog door. That's the problem.
Damn them.
Yep. One day they'll learn how to pee.
They're so cute though.
They are. They can get away with anything. All right, Melinda, is there anything else you wanted to share with the world that maybe we haven't heard before?
No, I just, again, I know my life, it would be totally different if I didn't get a chance to work for you guys. So I thank you for that, and thank the boys for that, guys for that, I should say. But I just, it's amazing what you did this week. It was really, really cool. I enjoyed listening to everybody talk about everything. So kudos to you, because that was pretty cool.
Well, it was a fun week, and I'm glad the guys all wanted to do something special. And we thank you, Melinda. You have been so great to us, and you've worked so hard for us. So thank you.
Every family needs a bitch, right?
professional bitch. It's a title you should love.
With a nice side, I was going to say. Oh, and by the way, everybody's asking why I'm called Chicken. I think I'm not going to tell.
Yeah, you can share that story if you want. I won't tell. But on here, you're Bitty Bell, and that's all that matters.
That's right. That's my peanut name, and I'll take it.
All right, Melinda. Well, it was very, very good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for adding to our NSYNC week. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, Bitty. All right. The sound of that buzzer means it's time for a cold read. We haven't done one of these in about a week.
I know. I feel like I'm really excited.
I have a feeling this one's going to be bad.
This is going to be bad.
Okay, this is from Mac Weldon.
Four.
Okay, four. There we go. Mac Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. Seriously, it is really simple. Yeah. This is not part of the script. It's like really simple, easy, and I love my 18-hour jersey boxer brief.
Yeah, I can't relate, but I'm very jealous.
If anyone asks boxers a brief, I say boxer briefs.
This is me not relating.
Mac Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants, and more that you will ever wear. And they have a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial. I said it right.
Microbial?
That said microbial.
No.
Antimicrobial. I said it.
Okay.
Back to the tape.
Okay.
Okay, maybe not. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. Not only does Mac Weldon's underwear, socks, shirts look good, they perform well, too. I've tested them out. And here we go. Mac Weldon really does value its loyal customers. So that's why they've created the Weldon Blue Loyalty Program. This is how it works. You create an account. It's totally free. Level one, you place an order for any amount and never pay for shipping again. Level two, once you purchase $200 worth of products from Mac Weldon, not only will you continue to receive free shipping, but you'll also start saving 20% on every order you make for the next year. And it also grants you access to new products before they are released to anyone else, as well as free gifts added to future orders.
Wow.
Pretty nice.
That's pretty cool.
So for 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com, enter promo code podcast.
Oh my God. That...
How dare you? How dare you?
My phone just did that.
macweldon.com, promo code podcast. How many was it? Like two?
That I mean, it was bad. Like two, but my phone had a problem. So.
Well, I am super excited to welcome back to the studio my friend from Iceland, Bloof is back. Hi, Bloof.
Hello there, Lance. It is amazing to be here again.
Well, it's great to see you. And I have something to talk to you about because you know all about chilling, especially in Iceland, right?
Oh, yes. It is has an atmosphere that is very cold. Mm-hmm. Some say so cold that it's really cold.
Well, do you ever feel like you're always on?
Yes, I must be on because the temperatures are so low. If I am not always on, I would freeze in my sleep and become a spirit of the Agamanuga.
So, Bloof, what do you do when you need a moment to chill?
Oh, Lance, when I need moments to chill, I usually dig a hole in the snow and I put my head into it like an ostrich. It is very lonely, but it is very calming. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other suggestions, Lance?
I do, because you know my favorite way to chill is pretty simple. I just crack open a Coors Light.
A Coors Light. Mm-hmm. Is that what you taste, what you call the Rockies?
That is the taste of the Rockies. And I'm sure, you know cold.
Oh, yes, Lance.
And I hear Coors Light is your favorite drink of choice.
So it is. It
way
is.
Way over those Iceland beers.
Oh, gosh, the beers of Iceland. We have our main beer. It is made from the urine of a centaur. It has a very earthy taste, but you know, it's not as great as that American Coors Light.
It is mountain cold, refreshing, made to chill. Coors Light is brewed with a three-step cold process. And oh. You know all about this three-step process.
Oh, it's my favorite steps comes in three.
Yeah, cold lagered.
Oh.
Cold filtered.
Oh.
And cold packaged.
Oh, my Klufin.
So it's
that's
actually
an expletive in my country. You don't have to beep it here.
Well, it's actually made to chill. The mountains, on Coors Lights, cold activated bottles and cans, they turn blue when you know they're ready to drink.
Oh, wow, Lance. It turns blue. It's like the mood rings of beer.
Mm-hmm. Chilled to perfection. Born in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado in 1978. You're older than me by 1 year. Coors Light is refreshing, crisp, and only 102
calories. 102
calories,
1978. I remember 1978 very well. I was 349 millennia old.
Well, that's why Coors Light is the one I choose when I need a moment of chill. So when you want to reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Right, Bloof?
Oh, Lance, it's the beer I will only have in my life from now on. No more centaur urine. Only Coors Light.
And remember, Bloof, you got to celebrate responsibly.
Yes, of course.
From your friends at Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
That's right, people out there. Drive safely. That includes cars, bicycles, and dragons.
You can have Coors Light delivered by going to get.coorslight.com and finding local delivery options near you.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you? Oh my God,
very good.
I look so tan in this. That's without that light on. It's like,
turn it on.
Yeah, I'll turn it on. My hair's really horrible. Wait. Tim Miller, where are you calling from?
Orlando.
So you're in Orlando.
Well, Altamont Springs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Altamont Springs. I remember Altamont Springs. What studio in Altamont Springs did we record at? We've been trying to figure out the name of that.
Was it Park Studios?
It might have been Park Studios. Yeah. No, none of us could remember. Because we think that's where we did either that or in New York, the vocals for Bye Bye Bye. And we can't remember.
I heard the show with Chris last night and I heard you guys talking about that. And
yeah.
Like, oh, God, yeah. It's right down the street. I also remember, I bought my condo from Johnny Wright.
Oh, yeah.
And do you remember when we played Red Hot and Boom in Altamont Springs?
Yeah, of course.
And it was like, oh, my God, now I live here,
Yeah. Why did you want to stay in Orlando?
The golf and no state taxes.
Okay, that's smart.
And I was when I started with you guys. I started in 1997, and I had been doing Blackstreet and Backstreet Boys before you guys.
You did Blackstreet and Backstreet.
Well, I was doing Blackstreet for a couple years.
Okay,
and then Johnny said, "Oh, I really need you," and they came down to see us for New York at the Amway Center. Mm-hmm. This new group, Backstreet Boys, and it was you know, part of a conversation we had years ago when they first started.
Yeah.
Because he always was thinking the second New Kids on the Block, because, you know, that's when I started with Johnny back in 88.
Oh, my gosh. So you met Johnny in 88. That was with New Kids on the Block?
Yeah, we were like the first two employees. He was actually the production manager, and I was just the sound guy, and we started off in a truck together, if you can believe that.
Oh, I can believe that. Now, what was your official title? Was it production manager?
For you guys?
Yeah.
Production manager and sound engineer. So there you go. Mixed the sound in.
Exactly. Production. You had a lot of jobs. A lot of jobs with us.
I did. I was very busy. It was it was awesome. It was the best time of my life, you know?
Well, let's specifically talk about the No Strings Attached era. You know, that was an insane time for all of us. The tour, No Strings Attached, the album was crazy. What was it like for you during that era? Like, describe that for us.
It was just a continuation, really, because we never stopped. Mm-hmm. We were always, always busy. And it was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, and so many memories. I remember, like, the album release, okay? Remember we were in New York driving around on that double-decker bus with Richard Branson and Petula Clark. And it was like, well, who ever dreamt that up, you know? And all those kids following us around. And then we drove through the set of the Today Show and interrupted their broadcast.
Yeah. I remember New Yorkers were just flipping us off the whole time. They're like, shut up. Because it was Sir Richard Branson's brilliant idea to get a double-decker bus, Petula Clark and us singing I Want You Back and Downtown, waking up New Yorkers at 6 in the morning, blasting it.
Okay, now, do you remember this? Do you remember we drove past the line of kids waiting for a Backstreet Boys CD to come out?
Yeah, I do.
And they were all flipping us off. They had signs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, that's what happens.
But No Strings Attached had the best sign ever in a crowd.
Yeah.
On one side it said, hello, Lance. Mm-hmm. Then the girl flipped it around and said, goodbye, virginity.
Well, you must have seen some really crazy fan stories because, you know, you were at the venue way longer than we were. You were there early. Are there some crazy fan stories you can tell us? Like, what was that like?
Oh, it was pandemonium. But also, I like to be Santa Claus because I was always in there, you know, 6-7 o'clock in the morning, the first one in, the last one out, you know, which is just part of the job. And I loved it. But, you know, we'd always have some extra tickets or the seat kills. And I would always go look for, like, the, you know, right before doors open, I'd look for the poorest kids or the biggest kids that had NSYNC written on their head and bring them down to the front row.
Aww.
You know, and then I remember the girls in the U-Haul, or not the U-Haul, in the mobile home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Winnebago. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that Winnebago was, I mean, that's, you know, we're doing a film about that right now. And it was just such an insane story that I was like, this has to be a movie. Like, it's ridiculous how that all went down. And it was a true story. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the things developing, I've told Chris that we're working on your show, which I think.
Oh, I told him too. I talked to him last night.
I mean.
He went radio silent on me because I actually sent him. He's the only one outside of me, you, and Greg that I sent the script to.
Yeah.
And I thought he would send something back, but he went silent.
So. Oh, no. No, he loves the idea because to catch people up. So, you know, you have been the ultimate roadie, right? When did you start on the road?
Oh, 1983. Mm-hmm.
1983. Who was that with?
Oh, it was a bar band. So, you know, I'm from Minnesota, so bar bands. But my first trip to Europe was in 83 on a USO tour.
Oh, yeah?
And from that to Boston and then New Kids on the Block and then Marky Mark, you know, and so on and so forth.
So, you know, the ultimate roadie just finds out just a few months ago that, you know, you haven't had kids, right? So a few months ago, you find out through a 23andMe type situation that you have a daughter. And not only do you have a daughter, but she's pregnant with your grandkid that she's going to have in just a couple of months. So all of this is like a Band-Aid being ripped off like no other for you. I mean, what was going through your mind when you found this out?
Utter disbelief, because I was looking for my biological parents. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea she was out there, you know?
Yeah.
And there she was. The first thing that popped up was you know, your daughter. You are either this person's parent or child. Well,
oh my God.
I'm 55. She's 30. Mm-hmm. You know, she was 29 at the time. And it's like, oh, God, well, good. Yep. And she looks just like me. You know?
She looks just like you. And did you know immediately who the mom was? You're like, yep, I remember that. Ooh,
well, I don't know if you're going to edit this out, but I had no idea. I did the math. Well, first of all, unfortunately, I was living with my girlfriend in Boston at that time.
No.
So I was probably screwing around on my girlfriend. And that's when I was with the New Kids on the Block. And I looked, and I know that she's from this girl was from Syracuse. I looked at the routing. It's like, oh my God, yeah, we were there, you know, so it all made sense. And
so blame the New Kids.
Yeah.
But you must be so happy though. I mean, I think this would be, you know, an added bonus to your life knowing that you have, you know, a kid out there and now a grandkid. So how are you handling it now?
Oh, I love it. I love her to death. She's just awesome. And, you know, we met, you know, I sent you a picture right away.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It's a little baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so cute. I love it. All right. Yeah. I can't wait to develop that with you because that's going to be so much fun. All right. Getting back to road stories with NSYNC. All right. What are some embarrassing things you can tell about us? You don't have to hold back. We can always edit it out. what are some of your favorite memories from the road with us?
Well, oh God, I even made some notes, but I didn't think you'd want any embarrassing stories.
No, do embarrassing. I'm good.
Okay, well, like when we all went to the brothel in Germany.
I don't think I was with you at that brothel. I was the only one that didn't go. Thank you very much.
Yeah. We had so much fun, and actually a lot of it was just good, clean fun, like your birthday on No Strings Attached.
Oh, yeah.
When I filled your dressing room full of baby pigs.
Yes. You made a farm in the dressing room, which I really appreciated, actually. And you were always – birthdays were always something special for you. So if anyone's birthday on the road – you created a really fun party for them, and it always ended with a silly string and the crap out of them as they sat in a chair.
We got to get silly stringed, and everyone wore costumes. We had a case of costumes, a road case, so we had people dressing up.
Yeah.
So many gorilla suits, so many eating competitions with the poodle.
The poodle.
You know,
yes, poodle.
You know,
oh.
I said, remember the election on No Strings Attached? Who NSYNC favorite lighting guy between Poodle and Bob?
Oh,
Fry.
That's right.
I ran that bogus election. And then, of course, I refereed all of these events. So, of course, you know, it was on the up and up.
Yeah.
But it all, and they had the kids and the fans holding up cards that would say, why ask why, vote Bob Fry, or use your noodle, vote for Poodle.
Yeah.
All of the kids. So it carries on for like a month and a half, and we get to Boise, Idaho, and we have the election. And I, you know, and I always buy these trophies. So I had the big trophy presentation. Poodle beat Bob Fry really bad. Mm-hmm. But if you remember, at that show in Boise, Demi Moore and Bruce Willis came to the show.
Right, yeah.
And I had showed them around the stage, and we're in the back.
I think that's when Rumor or someone threw up on Joey. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Bob Fry has been working, and he runs into the crowd of us, and I said, and here's the loser, Bob Fry, speaking about the election. Bob didn't know who they were, and he says, well, I'm no fucking loser, and who's this? The fucking potato queen? Because she was giving Poodle the trophy. And, you know, it was...
That's funny. Oh, do you remember any other, like, birthdays? Because, I mean, I know you set up a farm for me. Did any of the other guys get some crazy things set up from you?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, JC, I got the Green Bay Packer polka band on stage. They have an actual polka band.
Yeah.
With Chris, it was always... drinking, and we just had fun, you know? Mm-hmm. We just had fun, you know? Yeah. And remember, on No Strings Attached, we did rehearsals in Lakeland. Uh-huh. And we had MTV there filming us for the making of the tour and all of that. And do you remember the pyro demonstration?
Nope. I always loved the pyro demonstration.
Well, it's when Pyro Steve and his partner, Alan, were doing the pyro demonstration, and it's like safety first. This is what each pyro thing does. So everyone's standing around in safety first, and Pyro Steve hits the charge and blows up Alan, you know, in front of all of us in the MTV cameras, you know.
Yeah.
It was like a Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. You know, well, that's what happened to me at Super Bowl. Remember, you know, we were doing the rehearsal, the first rehearsal for Super Bowl, and you know, we had to run out from the locker rooms, right? And my in-ears are in, I'm in the dressing room, and I hear the music start. I'm like, oh crap, we're started. So I run, and you know, they had hundreds and hundreds of people running out with you, right? As you go out to the field. And I was late. I was kind of like upstream, you know, salmon going upstream, like through these fans. And I get to the stage, about to the stage, and the pyro blows up right in front of me. I mean, by just a few seconds, I would have been completely burned. But I remember being so pissed at MTV.
I thought I knew all of this stuff, but I was in the truck mixing the sounds.
Couldn't see it. Well, that's why if you saw the rehearsal, I sit in the middle of the stage, flipping off, just holding my fingers up, my middle finger up the whole time, being like, screw you, screw you, screw you. Like, you couldn't wait 10 seconds for me. Yeah.
It sucks. Oh my God.
What else do you remember about us? Let's go through each of the guys. All right, give us a lowdown on Chris Kirkpatrick. What are your fondest memories?
Well, I love Chris to death. He's one of my best friends, just like you and you know, all of you guys. The one thing I should say right away, though, is that I always felt bad that you guys didn't get enough credit, I think, for how much you guys were really involved. Mm-hmm. In how much you guys were just, you know, a part of it. You know, of course it's your group, but you know, it was you guys just did everything. Everyone had their role, and it was just a very cool thing, you know. And when people would kind of say, oh, it's a boy band, it's this and that. No, it's a real group, and these guys were super talented, and they worked so hard.
Yeah.
But to your question, Chris was like my running buddy. We were terrible together on the road. I mean, with the fireworks, or like when Joey bought all of the fireworks for the 4th of July in Little Rock. But, you know, we were always doing something, and he was always riding on the crew bus, and then he'd get out of hand, and he'd start wrestling with the crew.
Yep.
I remember he flipped Swarm Stallers and broke one of his ribs, and you know.
Yeah, he didn't understand pain, really. I remember when we were in somewhere – Jamaica or I don't know, somewhere down south, and we were doing a golf tournament, and it was with his name, the Access Hollywood host. Remember that? What's his name? Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! The one that got fired for being a perv. Is that one?
Yeah, but it's with the guy. The glasses.
Yeah,
with the blonde hair.
Yes, Pat O'Brien. Pat O'Brien. The owl over there.
He messed him up.
Oh my gosh! It twice kicked him in the balls. Like twice, they did Rochambeau him like no other.
We were huge in South Park.
I think we were the reason that South Park came to Europe. Like I think we were the first ambassadors for South Park when we lived over in Europe.
We lived it.
Yeah.
I remember when I took Chris golfing in Arizona, and the owner of the trucking company took us out there, and we were drinking quite a bit. And Chris is just getting wild, and he was making snow angels in the sand traps. It's like, oh no, this is bad. And he had the Happy Gilmore swing. Mm-hmm. So he hits a ball into this guy's house, like way to the right of the fairway, and it bounces off the tile roof. And the guy comes out of his house, and he's looking dead at us. And Chris hits another one right through the guy's huge bay window. These are massive. Oh, the guy was so upset. I just gave him all the money out of my pocket, and we just made it disappear, and we left.
I've never heard that story before.
The end of the story is the guy was like the Tom Duncan who owned the company, kept harassing Chris. I'm like, no, leave him alone, leave him alone. And he finally said something, and Chris choked him out on the green.
Oh, my.
And we had a very, very exclusive golf course. It was it was out of control. There was no hard feelings. You know what I mean? It was
Look,
no
Chris always had a lot of energy that he needed to get out in some way. And a lot of that times was hurting people, which I totally forgot to bring up on our interview with him. But we were in somewhere in Germany, I'm sure. And I remember we were at dinner, and we're eating ice cream. I remember we had dessert ice cream. And there was a candle, and he put my spoon handle over the candle flame. And I don't know how long that had been sitting there. I mean, definitely over a minute. So it was probably red. So I grab it, you know, to eat, you know, a big grab, you know, of the spoon. burnt the crap out of my hand. And he just thought that was so funny. I'm like, there's skin falling off my finger. I'm like, that's not funny. Like, how is that funny?
No, but he had a list of victims, his favorite victims, you know.
He did. He really did.
Poor David Brooks. You know, he's chased David Brooks around, you know. But it was fun.
Mm-hmm. What about Joey Fatone? You got any stories about Joey?
See, so many of these I just can't say.
I know.
Yeah. I love Joey. I was on a flight with Joey about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. I love Joey to death. Joey's a hard worker. You just remember the running joke was with all you guys had your in-ear monitors and Joey would talk into the mic and he thought you guys were ignoring him. But they're like, damn it, we don't have you in our ears, Joey.
Turn Joey down. Oh, poor Joey. And then we have Mr. Justin Timberlake. What are your thoughts on Mr. JT?
Well, I'm very happy for his success. You know, I remember my first day of rehearsals with you guys at Old Transtown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you guys called him the golden child. I don't remember if you called him that to his face, but, you know, he was always special. He was always special. And he was a perfectionist, and he was a good guy.
Yeah. Let's see who's left. Oh, JC. What was JC like on the road? Because I was just talking to Chris about this, where, you know, I feel like I got to know JC so much better after the group because we hung out more. But in the group, it was so mysterious and was, you know, to himself a lot of time. Didn't really go out as much as the rest of us did. So what do you remember about JC?
Oh, I love JC to death. He was one of my best friends. We actually spent a lot of time together on the road because, you know, musically, and we did all of the mixing, all of the TV shows, and like the IMAX movie and the DVDs. We mixed all of that together. So we spent a lot of time together.
Yeah.
And Joe and JC was a perfectionist too, just so talented. You know, you know, he's the type of guy that you would want your daughter to marry JC, you know, and he was just, you know, he was just a step above.
Were you with him during the Schizophrenic, that album? Were you doing stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that like? Because, you know, he doesn't really talk about it much, but as, you know, a person on the outside looking in, I did not like how the record label was treating him and his project. I felt like they tanked it on purpose. Did you feel that? Did you feel that the record label was just like not supporting the way they needed to support?
Well, they absolutely didn't support it because musically it was great.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of eclectic, but it was great. And it was a bummer, you know, because here we are, you know, doing clubs, not selling out clubs. And Justin is selling out arenas and doing those same clubs for fun, for free. And we were trying to eke out a living doing that, you know. And we had such a great band. They just didn't support him. It seemed like they had, for whatever reason, something against him or the project or whatever.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but we definitely had no support. You know,
Well, I felt it. I mean, and I, you know, looking in, I'm just like, well, did they want to choose Justin over JC to, you know, they only thought one could work. So they put everything behind them. And is this rumor true? I heard that when y'all were doing Pro Bowl in Hawaii, cause that was going to be the launch, I think, of blowing her up. That didn't get to happen because of the Janet Jackson Super Bowl halftime show, because her boob came out. I heard that they canceled JC because of that. Is that true?
That is true. That's absolutely true.
Wow.
You know, and it was like, you know, you heard things like, well, they spent more on Justin's Grammy performance than we got for our entire tour support.
Yeah.
You know, it's that type of stuff. And it's sad. I mean, I listen to that stuff still today. You know, I mean, it sounded good. And the band was so good.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's hearts were in the right, just like always, just like in sync. Everyone's hearts were always in the right place, and everyone's working towards a common goal. It was. Wish it would have turned out different.
I know, yeah, but I mean that's politics, I guess, in this industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just it's time for another cold read, this time for Blue Chew.
It is. I hope my phone doesn't malfunction this time.
Oh, I hope not too, because you make me so nervous.
There we go.
Anxiety there. All right, here we go. This is for Blue Chew. Guys, looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Want to be confident every time it's time for sex? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. Uh-huh, especially right now, because there's going to be a lot of babies born in the next 9 months from now. We're going to have a boom, y'all. So check this out. They've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra, Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they can work faster. And you can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And this stuff is cheaper than those other two. So this is a no-brainer. Basically, if you like sex, you'll like BlueChew.com. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. BlueChew's online physician consulting is free. And once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. And here's a great deal for you guys. Visit, and you know, you ladies out there, you know, want to give a nice present to your to your husbands and your significant others, visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code Lance. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code Lance.
Did you ever think that you would have a promo code for BlueChew? BlueChew,
I've dreamt Lance. Of it. Dreamt of
yes.
it.
And you didn't even get anything wrong.
Oh no. Oh, I forgot. That was a cold read.
I don't even know what to do.
Well, you know.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
Sometimes. Is there any other memories that you can think of that you wanted to share with our lovely fans here that maybe they haven't heard before?
My best day probably on the planet was on NSYNC, No Strings Attached. When we were in the middle of doing the HBO special, because mm-hmm. that's when Keith Richards was my roadie for a day.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I forgot Keith would come to a bunch of our shows and you would always have to have a bottle of Jack for him just sitting there at the soundboard.
Yeah. Contrary to popular belief, I never drank at any show while I was working, mm-hmm. except for the show at the Garden.
Yeah.
And I got hammered with him. And
because you always start every show starts with you playing Rolling Stones music right before
right,
that was always
for one. Uh-huh. Do you remember which one I didn't do it in and what happened?
The Celebrity Tour, the very last tour.
No, it was during No Strings Attached. Yeah. You said, Tim Miller, I am sick of the fucking Stones. And you said, I want you to play this. You demanded I play Monster Ballads. Yeah, it was like a K-Tel thing of heavy metal ballads. And I played that with gritted teeth. And then my soundboard like died. It was crash. And we had to stop the show
So it was back to Rolling Stones.
And then you said, okay, you can play the Stones.
Yeah.
You
know? It was Jumpin' Jack Flash. Every single time Jumpin' Jack Flash would come on, I knew the show was about to start.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was great. And then Keith came to the show and he's like, yeah.
Did Keith come to the show? What was that connection?
Because his daughters were huge fans, mm-hmm. you know.
But they weren't with him, were they?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. See, I just only saw him by himself. I'm like, why is he coming by himself to NSYNC shows?
Yeah, actually, I think he maybe only came to that one. But basically, they knew, his manager knew that I love the Stones. Yeah. I've always played the Stones. So she reached out and says, it's the daughters' birthdays. Can you make me a care package for them? So I put together an advanced copy of Bye 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 and all of the stuff and passes and everything and tour books. Sent it. They opened it up. They were crying because they were so happy. And he said, who did this for my daughters? Blah, blah, blah. And we went back and forth. He sent me a gift package. And then I said, what I really want to do is hang out with you. Mm-hmm. I've been a fan since I was like 7 years old. And he said, okay, you're on. Aww. And then he said, I'll be there on Wednesday. And I said, oh, I'll be in the truck for the broadcast mix. Can you come on Tuesday when I'm in front of house? So he said, okay. So he showed up. And I remember all you guys were like peeking around the corner, mm-hmm. you know, to see if it really was him. And there he was. And
I loved it.
Yeah. We got hammered in my production office and he went out and then, It was really, really cool. And then when I was playing the Stones before the show and he was on his back playing air guitar.
Mm-hmm. I remember flying over the sound booth during that, because I guess we were doing sailing maybe or something. I don't know where we were.
Oh, that was Ain't No Stopping Us Now.
Oh, yeah, Ain't No Stopping Us, yeah. And I remember kind of flying over Keith Richards and he's just flipping us off like, yeah.
I remember that. It was actually not to correct you, but to correct you. It's with the moving B stage.
Oh, it was, okay, yeah, there. Yeah.
You guys were coming out to front of house in the Moving Beast stage was the downstage part of the stage, mm-hmm. was on a card, raised up, spun around.
Yep.
And he was out there just flipping you off.
Yep. I loved him. Like, someone's been drinking, and it's because of Tim Miller.
It was great, yeah. And then our picture was in the paper the next day. And what the I got a copy of the photo from that. That was awesome. That was the best thing.
What were some dramatic things that happened maybe on the road that we didn't know about? I know there was many times where, we got a lot of bomb threats. Of course, idiots would call them bomb threats. And a lot of the times, you know, security would never tell us that, just so I guess it wouldn't freak us out. But were there any things that happened behind the scenes that were maybe a little scary?
Yeah, there was a lot of scary moments. Just, you know, you kind of take him in stride. There was a bomb threat where they found something at one point. I think that might have been in Atlanta.
Well, remember, was the Atlanta one, wasn't that the kid that had plans to come and take us out, and the mom found his blueprints in his room and they stopped him on the way to the concert?
Yes, I forgot all about that. Mm-hmm. And that was Atlanta, but that was a different time. But the thing you're talking about, yes, those kids were from Kentucky, and they were coming to kill NSYNC, and we had made all of these precautions in the building. We knew they were coming, you know. Mm-hmm. The police were notified. Everyone knew. And if you remember in Atlanta, in the old arena, the catering door, if you opened up the door for the catering people, you could see right onto the side of the stage. Mm-hmm. And they had that, and there was no security. It wasn't our fault, but it was the building guy's fault. No, there was no one on the door, and they could have just ran through onto the stage, directly onto the stage. It was terrifying.
And that was part of the plan, too. They knew that door. They were going to take out the guard that was there and then go right on stage,
And they had robbed a firearm store, a gun store. I mean, they were loaded. They were coming to get you guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's that stuff right there, of course. I mean, I was privy to that one because I guess it was so bad. But there must have been so many weird things that happened that just Johnny and all y'all just did not want us to know. Because I guess, I mean, that
Don't tell the guys.
It's scary, scary. There's a lot of crazies out there.
Just so much crazy shit, because you're dealing with 100, you know, we had, what, like 80 people on our own crew, you know what I mean? It was a big tour, but we had 24 trucks on that arena tour.
Oh, yeah?
You're dealing with 100 local stagehands, you know, and maybe five sets of full teeth between them, you know, and just stagehands fighting, people getting hurt and falling. I remember in Orlando, the Fox had a morning TV show, and I said, well, I always introduce the different crew guys, you know, to when the TV people would come around. So I had Tim Shanahan there, and I said, and this is Tim, our head carpenter. He's in charge of building the stage. And I said, and, you know, Tim is very safe. No one's ever been hurt. And then right behind us, as the backdrop, they're moving, putting the rolling stage together. And a roadie walks off the edge of the stage. He was like completely high, and he walked off the stage, and he lands like 12 feet down, and he's twisted with a broken arm and elbow and everything, he's all fucked up, you know. And Tim goes, looks at him, and goes, "Man down."
Oh man, God. I mean, there were so many injuries. All right, I want to test your knowledge on the tours because I have the stats for Celebrity Tour and the Pop Odyssey Tour.
The fact sheet?
And this is from our tour book. Yeah, we would put these little tour books together.
I helped Melinda make that.
I know. Well, let's see if you remember any of them, shall we? All right. How many tour buses were used on the Celebrity Tour?
16.
14. How many on the Pop Odyssey Tour?
Oh, how about if you count the merchandising?
Oh, well, I don't know. You're the one who wrote it. I don't know. What about the Pop Odyssey Tour? How many buses did it grow to?
Oh, God. It had, counting all three steel crews, it had to be 32?
Says 24 tour buses, but I bet, those 18-wheelers too.
We had 56 trucks every day that went with us everywhere, and then three sets of 15 staging trucks at Leap Road.
Right. How many people does it take to set up a tour the size of Celebrity?
Celebrity. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Like, my immediate staff, it was me and Flo and Angie, Brett Silverstein,
Do you know how many were in the traveling crew?
Oh, God, 68?
85 traveling crew on that tour and 100 local stagehands. And then on Pop Odyssey, It took...
Oh, that was in the hundreds. It was like 500
people it took to set up that tour. Yeah. Crazy. Do you remember how big the stages were? So how big was the celebrity stage?
Well, the celebrity stage was actually the inside part of the Pop Odyssey stage. We saved a bunch of money. We took the inside part.
Smart.
And turned it into a thing and added the ramp in the infamous catwalk.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what happened when we had the our friends from the ballet come and see us, and I did not know that it was Parents' Day?
No, what happened? I don't remember. Holy shit, that.
I had exotic dancers out in the crowd. For sound check, and I didn't realize all of your parents were coming in.
Oh my gosh.
And they came out and said, "What the hell is going on?"
So you had strippers out there? Love it. Oh, Tim, you're such the ultimate roadie. All right. How many miles do you think we toured for Celebrity? Guess how many miles we went?
Ooh. Well, we started up in Washington. 25,000?
8,000. It's only 8,000 miles. And then let's see. Pop Odyssey went. Where is that?
Pop Odyssey was so much fun. That was so much fun.
18,000 for Pop Odyssey miles.
And remember, we had so many storms and the bad weather on that tour. We went like the whole first half of the tour and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad storm in Cleveland and Chicago and then the hurricane in Birmingham, the hurricane in Miami.
I love the difference in the Pop Odyssey tour and the Celebrity tour, because on the Pop Odyssey tour, it says props. There were three trucks full of props and toys for the show, right? And then it goes Celebrity tour, props, none, thank God.
Oh, well, we had the lifts, and that was about it.
That's all we needed. It's all we needed.
Oh, the props, I would just be worried sick every night. It was just so much stress. Just what, is it all going to work? You know, we had, four sets of lifts, and we had moving sidewalks, mechanical bulls, the fly gag, the pyramid, the Jedi robed people.
Yeah. How many tickets were printed for the Celebrity tour?
That we knew about?
I know. We won't even get into that. Finding out how screwed we got from so many people in our orbit, taking advantage of us, selling tickets on the side. Oh, my goodness. Crazy. But how many tickets do you think were printed for the Celebrity Tour?
For Celebrity Tour, probably 18,000 times, 60 shows? 700,000?
1.56 million tickets.
Holy cow.
And then Pop Odyssey, how many do you think were printed for that?
Well, that was 45 shows times, and it was about, it was all stadiums, but all, 75% capacity because it was end stage. 45 stadiums times 1.9 million?
Close, 2.2 million tickets were printed for that one. Cool. I mean, you were close. Look at you, still knowing all the facts.
20 years later.
Yeah. Well, Tim, what's next for you? Are you on the road with, obviously on the road with no one right now, but Will Smith, Jaden Smith, are you still touring with them?
This is the 20th year with the family.
Mm-hmm.
We do about a half dozen Will shows a year, and Jaden is super busy. So we're out with Justin Bieber this year. So it's kind of like the fourth generation because, went from New Kids.
Mm-hmm.
To you guys and Britney, and then to the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
Now next with Jaden,
Four generations. Yeah.
And it's funny because I remember you guys asking me, what happened to New Kids? We'll never do that.
Yeah.
And Black Eyed Peas asking me, what happened to NSYNC? That'll never happen to her.
No, we always get told things. You know, the one thing that we learned, I think Johnny probably told us this about New Kids. He's like, because, they're every year they wanted to make dolls of us. And we always said no, because Johnny said, once you make dolls, your career's over. That it happens with every group. New Kids did it. They ended the group. And then we did the marionettes. I'm like, well, they're not really dolls. They're marionettes. So does that count? And then 2 years later, it was done. So there might be something up with that.
Yeah, the voodoo doll. Remember that story, too, that we won't go into.
Yeah, no, we won't talk about that one.
The voodoo doll. Hey, but we should get some honorable mentions. For me, anyways, as being your ferret babysitter.
Oh, yes.
Every time you guys would take off to do promo. Oh, good old Tim got stuck with your ferret.
Did you love that ferret? It wasn't the best pet to have.
That ferret smelled bad. The rest of the roadies on my bus hated the ferret.
You had to bathe it every other day. Were you not bathing my parrot, Tim?
Oh, jeez.
How dare you? And they pooped in the corners. It was so weird that they would only poop in corners. Very strange. But yeah, ferrets.
And it was in a round room. It was in a round cage. So yeah.
Well, Tim, it has been so much fun catching up with you. I love hearing your road stories. I'm sure the fans do too. So thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I wish I was a better interviewee or something, but you know.
Are you kidding me? You're great. You're so interesting to listen to. Like, seriously, you're awesome.
Well, all right, I hope we can do this again.
Yeah, oh, we will. And we might be doing this a lot because we're going to be all stuck in our houses for who knows how long. So, yeah, we're just going to do maybe, this.
Maybe we can do the R or X version later.
Yeah, okay, yeah. We'll do the pay subscription version of it later.
Yes.
All right, Tim Miller, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk
right,
to you later.
Thank you, Lance.
All
take
right, buddy.
Care.
All right. See you later. Bye. All right, my little peanuts. That is all the show I have for you today. All right. Tomorrow, we're kind of rounding out these interviews with Johnny Wright.
The man.
The man with a plan. Johnny Wright, who was our manager the whole entire run of NSYNC and still is with Justin to this day. And we're going to catch up with him. So I can't wait to talk to him. I have not done this interview yet.
That's going to be interesting.
This was like live almost.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I can't wait to see what's in his head, especially go down memory lane with what happened during No Strings Attached. I mean, he was right there on the front line, especially his partners with Lou Pearlman. So, there's a lot to unpack, as you say.
There is a lot to unpack.
A lot to unpack on tomorrow's show. All right, guys, be good to each other. Take care of them animals. And we'll see you tomorrow on another edition of the Daily Popcast. The Daily Popcast is executive produced by me and Sim Sarna, written and produced by Jess Keener, and music by Josh Cook and Alicia Eagle. The Daily Popcast is a Cloud 10 production and is powered by Simplecast.